Welcome to a burning fire, Jeremiah 20 and verse 9. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. Judah had returned from 70 years of Babylonian captivity. This return was like the rebirth of the nation, a deliverance from Egypt, a new and fresh start for Israel. They were given divine instructions to establish again national life and their religion. And through that nation, God would reveal Himself and Jesus the Christ would come. The prophets Isaiah, Jeremiah, Daniel, Ezekiel, and others had kept before the people that the exile would not be the end of this special nation through which God planned to fulfill His promises to Abraham. And even though they had violated God's law and suffered the resulting losses, this did not nullify the yet unfulfilled promises of the seed through which all the families of the earth would be blessed. The nation would return to its homeland, and this they did. And there were three great restoration leaders in the return of the Jews from captivity. As there had been three migrations from Judah into Babylon, so there were three great migrations from Babylon back to Judah. Under the leadership of Zerubbabel, and Ezra, and Nehemiah, each in his own time, there was the rebuilding of the temple, a great religious revival, and the restructure of the walls of Jerusalem. The prophecy and the work of the prophet Haggai came into the context of the return and the efforts led by Zerubbabel in the rebuilding of the temple. We want to listen to some encouraging words that came from the mouth of the prophet Haggai. When the Jews reached Palestine, they enthusiastically began the work on the temple. They laid the foundations and set up some altars, but the work stopped. Now this was due to outside opposition from adversaries, but also due to the indifference on the part of some of the Jews themselves. The enthusiasm of the project began to wane. This inactivity extended for some 15 years. The nation was not prospering as had been expected. The religious activity had not been restored. It was into this stale and stalled situation that comes Haggai, the prophet of God. Now Haggai was a man of unconquerable faith, an iron resolution with a burning zeal for the restoration of the temple. He had the ability to arouse people to action. He is more noted for his sternness than his softness. But his sternness was motivated by an unquenchable love for God and God's people, for God's ways and for God's temple. The prophets of the Old Testament were both proclaimers as well as predictors. Their work was more of forthtelling and that of foretelling. Haggai was a prophet more in the category of the preacher than one who foretold the future, although there were future elements in many of his words. He spent his words denouncing sin, warning of judgment, instructing in the law, and encouraging his brethren to duty and to action. Now he met great difficulties in his work, but his task was crucial to the future of the nation. And in the two chapters of Haggai, we have four discourses that he gave to the people. The first of Haggai's words were words of rebuke. The people were living in error and inconsistency, and this had to be called to their attention. "Thus speaketh the Lord of hosts," Haggai said, "this people, the time is not come, the time that the Lord's house should be built." In other words, many were saying that the rebuilding of the temple was a good work, that it ought to be done, but not right now. The time was not right, according to some of them. They needed to wait for better times. It seems that the history of those who profess to serve God is often blemished with those who say they agree with some work, but who are always finding a way to defeat it by saying, "We better wait until some better time." Why, this has been true in many efforts undertaken for growth and for building. It is postponed to many mission efforts and other works of the church. It is choked off much benevolent work. "Don't do it now. Let's wait. Let's see what happens. Let's see how things go." Surely there is to be intelligent consideration before any work is undertaken. But with some folks, there never is the right time to get on with it. This was the problem among the people of Judah regarding the rebuilding of the temple. But they were so inconsistent in their actions that they proved themselves faithless and selfish. Haggai said, "Is it time for you, O ye, to dwell in your sealed houses, and this house lie waste?" The people must have thought it was time for them to build their own houses. The time was ripe for doing what they wanted to do for themselves. But building the temple of the Lord ought to be postponed. It just did not make any sense. Some today say that we lack money, we lack ability, we lack training, we lack knowledge to do what needs to be done. But they readily assume other activities that take the same or similar demands as if what benefits them personally they're willing to do. Isn't it strange how some leaders have wailed that it's a bad time to borrow money to build or to restore the House of Assembly? But they'll go out and borrow money for their own businesses and their own houses. Some say we cannot afford to assume a responsibility to support some work in some mission field, but they find no difficulty to buy on credit whatever they wish to get for themselves. Why is that? It was true that the nation of Israel was not getting anywhere. Haggai said, "You have sown much and bring in little. Ye eat, but you have not had enough. Ye drink, but ye are not filled with drink. Ye clothe yourselves, but there is none warm. And he that earneth wages to put into a bag with holes." You see, the people were busy scurrying here and there and everything, doing whatever they wanted to do, but they failed to put first things first. Haggai exposed them to their sin. And we must add here that when these people faced their neglect and transgression, they soon got busy with the work of the temple. But they faced another problem, and that was from those who hindered the work by being a source of discouragement. Judah had been in exile for 70 years, and there were some who had gone into exile and who had now returned, who could recall the former temple before it was destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon. Well, they were much older, but they could remember. And as the new temple began to rise from its foundation again, some standing by were heard to say, in essence, "Oh, it's nice, but it doesn't compare with the one I remember. It's not like the earlier one. Your work is inferior to what was done before." Haggai said, "Who is left among you that saw this house in her glory? And how do you see it now? Is it not in your eyes in comparison of it as nothing?" Haggai 2 and verse 3. These words that belittled the work was discouraging to those who labored. There is no indication that the critics were helping to improve matters at all. They only stood by and criticized. They seem to have forgotten that the first temple had been destroyed because they and others of their generation had brought calamity upon the nation by their sins. If they had been busier encouraging the efforts rather than mocking them, then the work could have progressed faster. We once heard a brother respond to some critics of him and what he was doing, saying that they all agreed it needed to be done, but some didn't like the way he was doing it. And he said, "I like the way I am doing it better than the way that you are not doing it." The critics of the new temple, however, were wrong in their evaluation of the work. Haggai said, "The glory of this latter house shall be greater than of the former, saith the Lord of hosts. And in this place I will give peace, saith the Lord of hosts." So the work continued in spite of this hindrance and these discouraging remarks. Some have thought possibly Haggai used these words with reference to the spiritual temple, the church that was to come. Now, we mentioned that things were not going well in Judah as they should have been because of the neglect to attend to first things first. But with the teaching of Haggai and his encouragement to get on with the work, there was a renewed effort. The people started in the right direction again, but they became impatient, and they began to cry, "Well, where are the blessings we're supposed to receive?" They had started to work again, and they wanted rewards immediately. Now, this specific complaint is not made in the text of Haggai, but this attitude is implied in chapter 2, verses 18 through 19. Consider now from this day and upward, from the 24th day of the 9th month, even from the day that the foundation of the Lord's temple was laid, consider it. Is the seed yet in the barn? Yea, is yet the vine, and the fig tree, and the pomegranate, and the olive tree hath not brought forth? From this day I will bless you. Haggai was trying to show his brethren that their reward was to come not when they began the task, but when they completed it. Yes, they had started again in the right direction, but they had not accomplished the goal. The harvest was not yet in storage. The trees had not yet produced their fruit. For 15 years they had sown the seeds of indifference and selfishness and inactivity, drifting along in the wrong direction, putting emphasis on the wrong things, following the wrong advice, tolerating sin, and they had no right to expect an overnight change in conditions just because they had rounded the corner and had started the right way. No man has a right to expect the field to be completely plowed just because he started his tractor. No man has a right to expect an immediate harvest just because he's sown his seed. People get things into a bad way over a period of years and then wake up to see their folly. They make a turnaround and sometimes get impatient and expect things to clear up overnight. Haggai was telling his people that things do not work that way. They were to be commended that they had started, but they were supposed to finish the work, not just start again in order to be blessed. And it's no different in principle today, friend. Faithfulness and patience and steadfastness and continuation is what brings results. People can start a plan of action, but the test comes in completing it. And finally, Haggai does speak about the future, and he gives them an encouraging word. He told them that God would protect them from their enemies, and their heathen adversaries would be overthrown. In chapter 2, speak to Zerubbabel, the governor of Judah, saying, I will shake the heavens and the earth. I will overthrow the thrones of the kingdoms. I will destroy the strength of the kingdoms of the heathen. I will overthrow the chariots and those that ride in them, and the horses and their riders shall come down, every one by the sword of his brother. Yes, these people would be established again. Their purposes of having been chosen of God would be accomplished, because, even as Haggai said, I have chosen thee, saith the Lord of hosts. Today we have encouraging words from God, just as Judah received them through Haggai. If we will refuse to give heed to the words of faithless men, who are always pleading for a postponement of everything and waiting on every action, if we will neither listen to those who only criticize and belittle every effort we put forth, if we will not grow impatient for rewards before we put forth the needed labor, if we will put first things first in our lives and establish our religious priorities, God shall bless us just like he did Judah. Our enemies shall be overcome just as their enemies were overcome. Our promises are not that we shall overcome physical enemies, but the spiritual enemies that would destroy the soul. Eternal happiness and spiritual protection shall be ours. As we labor in the building of the Lord's house, the church, we have God's assurances that he will be with us, just as the people of Judah had those assurances when they were erecting the physical temple in Jerusalem. Let us avoid their mistakes. Let us be encouraged in spirit by the same kind of words of encouragement that came from Haggai. This has been A Burning Fire, and your speaker is Jim Boyd. Until next time.